The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, from wherever you're listening, I am Rhonda Hall with my dear friend and partner, Ann Smith, welcoming you to Circle Connections and another great radio show. I have a double back. Can you hear this, Rhonda?
Yes.
The double back?
Yeah, and there's no greater
time. I don't quite know what to do with this. I think I'm going to have to hang up.
Okay,
and you'll
I'll
have
continue
to take
on.
Over.
Yeah.
Okay,
and there's no greater time
in.
Than now for women to be awake, confident, empowered, and connected for the common good. Circle Connections is dedicated to support you in this process by bringing you inspiring and insightful conversations on topics that matter to us all as consciously evolving women devoted to making a difference. Women's leadership is needed now to save our planet. We at Circle Connections are dedicated to reach out to women and girls around the world and help unite efforts for making positive difference locally and globally. Circle Connections is launching the UN Women's Circle campaign that will bring women and girls together to learn the benefits of using the Circle process to identify critical community issues and to ensure that the wisdom of grassroots women will be heard by local and national governments and UN Women, the super agency forming. Don't miss out on being a part of this campaign and many other meaningful activities. Join Circle Connections today.
Can you hear anything?
All right. Are you there?
Hello. I lost you, and now I'm back. I'm back.
Hello.
It sounds like
you're back. Great. Now let's hope that Anne hops on for some reason. We're having technical difficulties. So don't miss out on being a part of this important campaign and many other meaningful activities. Join Circle Connections today by going to www.circleconnections.com. It's free and easy, so don't wait. Well, it seems that everywhere you turn, the U.S., everywhere you turn in the U.S., ordinary working Americans are faced by economic crisis. Higher food and fuel prices and the tidal wave of home foreclosures is compounding the already difficult situation of stagnating real wages, falling benefits, spiraling credit card debt, and the continual threat of losing one's job to offshoring. So meanwhile, the looming specter of climate change threatens the fragile ecological balance which we need to survive as a species. Now, the good news is that in response to these threats to their survival, people all over the world are using their ingenuity and collective power to innovate new, more people-centered economics. Our guest today is Julie Mathai. Julie is a professor of economic at Wellesley College, where she teaches courses in introductory microeconomics, the political economy of gender, race, and class, and feminist economics. She was also the author of Economic History of Women in America, Women's Work, the Sexual Division of Labor, and the Development of Capitalism. So Julie joins us to share in an important conversation about the power and potential of a solidarity economy. So welcome, Julie. We're really grateful to have you as our guest, and I'm going to do our best to kind of do double duty here at the switchboard, trying to get Anne back on the line.
I think I'm back on. Can you hear me now?
Oh yes. Oh great.
Yeah, I just had to step away from my computer. But Julie, we apologize. We don't usually have this. So anyway, it's great to have you on the show. So please tell us about the solidarity economy and break it down so that we who are not economists understand.
Well, thanks for having me, Anne and Rhonda. It's very great to be on your show. And thought maybe you might first want me to talk a little bit about how economics is kind of just demystified a little bit for you, because
yes.
I think a lot of people think, I can't understand economics, it's too hard, it's too technical, and or maybe you took it in school or in high school or college and you didn't understand it and it was all graphs and equations. And in fact, the economy is so keyly important to our lives and really is about how we provision our needs, how we produce things, what kind of jobs we have, the kind of relationships we have in our workplaces, the kind of way that income is distributed, so whether we have an equal society or unequal society. And has a lot to do with whether our government is democratic or not, because when we have concentrated income among the wealthy, like we do in this country and the corporations, then they can buy a lot of power over the political process and therefore prevent it from really supporting us and doing what the people need. And also, yes, as many women know, as monetary economies developed, women were assigned the unpaid work of taking care of the children and the home and the family. And so that work has been undervalued in capitalist economies or market economies for centuries. And that's a huge problem that feminist economists are looking at, and how to not just ignore it or have women move out of it to try to earn equal opportunity with men in the labor market, but to also figure out how we can value the unpaid caring work and also inject caring, women's caring, into the economy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, important. Ah, right. And
so
I remember,
that's the beginning, but if you want me to start and talk about the solidarity economy now, just start describing it to you, I
sure
can do that. What happened was the solidarity economy is, I've been a left economist for decades, and you know, we sit back and we try to envision some better than capitalist economy and how workers would have power and how it would be more equal and everything. But basically, that wasn't happening, and we were just kind of criticizing capitalism. And then people started to realize that these new economic forms were starting to emerge under our noses, especially in the southern countries, less in the north, but definitely all over the world, there are these new kind of economic activities. And I think the best way to describe them is with values, because if you think of our capitalist economy, the values are competition. You know, you try to beat people in the competition and earn more money. You try to consume more than other people. You try to you pursue your narrow self-interest. There's an idea that money really is the value, the way your success or sign of success, the sign of being valuable, is if you're paid a lot of money. So those kind of values are core to capitalism, whereas these other kinds of economic activities started to emerge that were based more in cooperation, like the use of cooperative workplaces where people work together and there's no boss, the emergence of socially responsible firms and consumers and workers where people do those things for themselves but also caring about other people. And that partly, I think, again, is the influence of feminism and women coming into the traditional masculine economy and bringing the values we were brought up with, which was to care about others, to care about children, to care about the needy and the needs of others. So those new kind of activities are starting to emerge all over the world.
What are
new ways
of
making
countries that you see that happening, Julie?
Well, Brazil is one of the leader countries in developing the solidarity economy, and they just, I think it was last week, President Lula declared that Brazil was going to be a fair trade country. That is, to everything that they buy, that the government of Brazil buys, will be, they will take care to buy from producers that treat their workers well, that treat the environment well, that are more cooperative. So they're actually, they're the first country in the world to do that. There are fair trade towns in Europe, and they're, you know, in other words, it's putting this other set of value screen over just the narrow self-interest or cheapest price or highest profits. So Brazil is big. Quebec and Canada is very evolved in the solidarity economy. A lot of the Latin American countries have now put the solidarity economy into their constitutions, and that they're really trying to develop an economy. One of the things we talk about with the solidarity economy is that it's focused on filling needs, which is funny that we'd think that our economy would be, but actually there's not really a focus on filling people's needs as much as on profits and growth. So it's not being generated from the goal of filling people's needs, making sure that all the stakeholders, everyone who's influenced by a firm, is taken into account, not just the owners of the firm. So if a firm makes a decision, it should be caring about its workers, it should be caring about its consumers, it should be caring about nature, it should be caring about the suppliers it's buying from. And so it's a whole new set of concepts that are developing in different places. And one of the things about this need-centered economy is also that when people's needs aren't being met, that has, people are starting to challenge the rules of private property around that. So there's a big landless worker movement in Brazil where workers are taking over land that's not being used and using it to grow their own food and create communities. And there's factories in Argentina and actually all over Latin America that when they get closed by the employers because they don't want, owners don't want to keep it open, the workers are starting to just take them over and make an argument to the local government that they should have the right to work in this factory if it's not being used by anybody. So that's very interesting, too.
Well, and the structure of these companies, too, like I've heard in Argentina and also in Brazil, are a flattened structure. They're no longer the hierarchy.
Right.
But they're more of what we call that circle model where there's more equality, more democratic process.
Exactly.
And right. And of course, the productivity, as we all know, is highly increased when everybody is involved.
Yes. The biggest example of cooperatives, it's actually a set of cooperatives. I think there's hundreds of them actually as part of the Mondragon Cooperative in the Basque region of Spain. And they've done everything there is cooperative. They even have a cooperative that helps develop new cooperatives. So it finds out what possible good that could be produced, and it figures out the technology and designs it, and then finds people who want to work in the cooperative. They have cooperative schools. They have cooperative supermarkets. They provide their own health insurance, and they produce a lot of durable goods. And they've been working on this cooperative model for decades very successfully. But we are so taught to be competitive and this idea that that's what brings out the best, whereas, in fact, they're finding out that when a larger group of people weigh in on a decision, it's going to be a better decision. And I think that's because you have different heads, you know, everyone sees it from a different point of view. And so when you bring people together, and like you said, that circle process where people, there's something almost magical that can happen in a group where new ideas can come out from the group that nobody individually could have had.
Right.
So that's empowering the members of the group. And the thing about the cooperatives is that they're finding in India, they're using them, creating cooperatives for poor and unemployed women. They're finding that they actually have a really good effect on the women. So it's kind of like a consciousness-raising thing. I think of in this country, we had those consciousness-raising groups in the early 70s, and we would sit, you know, it'd be in the evening after work, and we'd sit around and talk. And the women in these cooperatives in India are, they come together and work, and they sew or do whatever, and they talk, and they support each other, and they think about their relationships at home and how to empower themselves and how the financial arrangements they have at home, and and it brings a transformation. So when a worker is treated with respect in a cooperative, the worker owns the is a co-owner of the business. And in a capitalist business, the owners are the owners, and most workers, all workers are bossed around. So it's really a dictatorship inside the corporation or in the regular business. So it really goes, it's antithetical to our country's belief in democracy to have these totalitarian corporations and firms. But people have taken it so for granted that they just, and I think it definitely is, takes training to learn how to cooperate. But women, I think partly because we're used to relating, that's been our traditional role, I think it's much less of a jump for women. We're used to knowing how to care about other people and make their needs important. That's what we're taught to do. If anything, we might too much put down our own needs. But I live in a co-housing, which is one of these solidarity economy forms where it's a kind of a big, big cooperative living space. Well, we have our own homes, but then we have common space, a common dining room and a common kitchen and everything. And then we have these meetings, general meetings together, and we decide by consensus. And it is pretty striking that the women are just more, it's easier for us to think of what's good for the whole. Just mm-hmm. like a traditional woman, she has to think what's good for her family. Where the man's role is to go out and compete as an individual and beat out other guys, and that's the way the labor market's been set up, or the entrepreneurial situation. The other interesting thing about that I really like about the solidarity economy that is very, very burgeoning in the U.S. today is social entrepreneurship, and mm-hmm. that's where you're an entrepreneur, but your main goal is to solve a social problem, whether it be some new green technology or find a way to get electrification to a poor neighborhood or poor area, or find a cure for X or Y, or fill a community need. But it doesn't mean it's not just a nonprofit. It could be a not-for-profit business, but it could be a for-profit business that's also for a social good, social goal at the same time.
One of the challenges that Circle Connections took on when Ann and I were forming Circle Connections, we had lengthy conversations about whether to organize as a nonprofit or for-profit.
Yeah.
And we really wanted to create that bridge of creating a for-profit, but with a real social initiative
yes.
as our underpinnings.
So it's not a one either or. And
right.
so, and the goal with the social solidarity economy is to get all the businesses to take on, to be aware of the social impact and try to maximize their positive impact on society. And there are some who are switching and becoming more progressive in that direction. And the other thing you have to do, and this is what movements have been doing all over the world, is also expose when corporations do things that are really bad for people or really bad for the environment and really shame them, really try to change the expectation. And people are even talking about changing the corporate charter, because corporations are created, they're legal entities that are created through this charter, corporate charter law, and they used to have to care about, be basically approved by the state as serving society, and they changed a lot of the corporate law in the last couple centuries to basically have all these rights now, and now they're like citizens, they can spend all they want on political campaigns after Citizens United, which is just terrible. They really shouldn't have that power. So we need to think about legal structures, changing legal structures, especially the corporate charter, so the corporations have to serve the citizens and all the stakeholders and not have all these special rights like freedom of speech and limited liability where they can do whatever and the stockholders are not liable beyond the value of their stock. And also the whole power of corporations over the government that I was talking about that really needs to be reformed so that they can't buy political power, because it corrupts our democracy. So citizens are not having the power.
Right. Well, okay. with the capitalistic model that we have been experiencing for so long, being so stubborn and so convoluted, do you really see that a solidarity economy and a social economy really have the opportunity or the possibility of planting roots. I mean, women are really the ones who control money, and yet it still amazes me that they haven't really applied that power in that social mm-hmm. economy way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a possibility. As I said, in the U.S., we have a very strong movement for social responsibility, and people, if you poll consumers, people really do care. Especially people are very aware of the climate change problem. And I think that if we wake up to that, we're going to have to realize that we're going to have to change the rules, because the rules are such that it makes it very difficult to protect our Earth. Where I do see the changes happening more is in the southern countries, and even in Europe, they have a lot more going on. The U.S. is really, you know, we're like the bastion of free enterprise and free trade, and this, especially recently, things have really regressed around the notion of a safety net for everybody and a social responsibility of the government for the people and the ability to regulate corporations, and that the idea that the market really isn't going to be okay if you leave it alone. There's been a big push from the Reagan-Bush years of that. So I don't know, but the interesting thing about the solidarity economy is that it coexists. It exists in the middle of capitalism, that if you look around in any community, there's going to be some cooperatives you could buy from. There's going to be some fair trade sources you can buy from. There's going to be some community-supported agriculture you can buy from. There's going to be some farmers markets where you get to buy directly from the farmers. There might be a time trade circle or some kind of community money where you can start exchanging with your neighbors. There's going to be co-housing. There's going to be freeganism, where people are going to be, you know, living off the waste stream and going dumpster diving and sharing it with other people. And there's going to be swap meets, and there's couch surfing, and there's all these institutions already. And one of the fun things about the movement is just trying to start to map them all. Though that's just in the U.S. And then if you look in other countries, there's a lot more happening in terms of, you know, numbers of people involved in cooperatives or numbers of people involved in kind of transformative property relations or whatever. So I do think that's the neat thing. I think we thought originally, the leftists thought, well, it's going to be capitalism, then it's going to be supplanted by a totally different system. And the interesting thing about the solidarity economy is it coexists right now with capitalist relations. And in fact, there's always been people in our economy who didn't act like traditional capitalists. There's always been generous people. There's always been bosses who really cared about their workers and kept their business open for them, even though they were tired or they might have been more profitable to move somewhere. There's always been sharing and cooperation. And in the women's sphere, there's been all kinds of swapping and sharing around childcare and food and extended family. And so it's... one of the things that people have noted is that we have given capitalism too much power in terms of kind of acting like all of the relations in our economy have those narrowly competitive, money-focused values, and it's not true. So to the extent that right now people can begin to start living in the solidarity economy and try to grow it.
Well, that is the good news, that it's happening right now. It's easy to do. All we have to do is look around in our own neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And if there isn't, you know, and if there's more to be done around these cooperatives, and we can help start one, certainly support them, certainly support our farmers market. And I work with the farm workers down here, and we are part of that whole fair food campaign.
Yes.
Which is to give the farm workers, you know, a living wage.
Yep.
Which they didn't have, and, you know, basic human rights. But that has started to change, you know. There's a shift. All of a sudden, we're able to get these rights for our farm workers, which has taken 20 years.
Yep.
But it's happening.
So that's the thing that I'm saying, that it is, those are new values getting injected into the economy, and every time that happens, it's a good thing. To get those fair wages for those workers it's a wonderful thing, and it's spreading like the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, where they use consumer boycotts of Taco Bell and everything to get the higher wages for the tomato pickers. And it was very, very successful. Then they went across to the other ones. And so we learn from each other, and we copy each other, and people get a taste of it. You know, and I think in the end, you know, you can think of 200 years hence, people are going to look back and say, I can't believe we used to just let firms pollute and fire all their workers because they could get a slightly higher, you know, lower wage somewhere else, and the kind of practices we have now. They are pretty backward.
Well, I remember reading David Corton's work, you know, book, you know, when corporations ruled the world, and was like, oh my God, it's so true. But now it's going back to being a people's movement. And, you know, that's the exciting thing is like, you could throw up your hands and say, there's no way you can take on a multinational company. Well, yes, and as like you're saying, and we as the consumers of women, you know, our money will count where we spend it.
Yes, totally. A boycott is very, very successful.
Yep.
And I think those small cells of conscious individuals leading their own small movements, I think the one of the exciting things to me and what Circle Connections feels the pulse of is that those small individual little pockets are beginning to come together. And there's such power by us not only just bumping elbows, but now linking arms.
Yes. That's really important. And that has been hard in the U.S. People are, even the movements are individualistic. But there's so much going on. There's such a foment of people organizing. And a lot of times, like you said, it's the local groups that are so good. And solidarity economy is really about moving back to smaller, to the extent that we can, moving back to smaller, more local business, really getting to know your neighbors and revitalizing community. So many people call it community economy. Some people call it social economy. Some people call it solidarity economy. But to let us localize ourselves and then be connected globally with others and support each other, but really have our roots down and make sure that the businesses around are accountable and transparent.
Well, this is all very, very good news. Now, when you're teaching this in Wellesley, and of course you're one of the most avant-garde universities, colleges around, especially for women, are the women and are all the students, both women and men, hearing this, and are they now ready to just jump in and help make a change when they leave?
Well, we just have women students, and my students that take my course, who know what I'm going to teach, they are. I mean, I think they realize there are things that they can do. And it's happy for me to be able to teach it and be able to say these are things you can do in your everyday life, and also in whatever your work or whatever, that can help make this transformation that we really need. I mean, we really are, it seems like capitalism's always been a crisis, but this is really a big one. And the climate change is like the end of the reproduction of life if we don't stop. So, yes, they are, I mean, I think that they are influenced. I'm not saying they're all going, there's not like one right answer of what to do either. It's just be aware of the impact of yourself on others. Be aware of how we are interdependent. We can't live as individuals. We need the whole. We need each other. We need the environment. And also, that's how we get meaning in our lives. If we do something that's having bad effect on other people, it's going to have an effect on us. It's not healthy. It's not going to make us feel fulfilled.
Now,
Julie,
can
you offer
a website?
Or
how can people who can't go to Wellesley be able to benefit from your incredible wisdom and your enthusiasm for this solidarity economy?
Well, I do have a website that's transformationcentral.org, www.transformationcentral.org, and there is a button on there about the solidarity economy. And also people are welcome to email me if they can spell my name, which is my email is jmatthaei at Wellesley, wellesley.edu. Or you can Google me and you'll probably find my email that way too.
Yeah,
but it's mattthaei.
Yeah, you're definitely there on Google because you're one of the shining stars of feminist economists out there with such practical information that it makes it really easy to say, hey, I can be a part of the solidarity economy. So I just can't thank you enough for the work that you're doing and for being on our show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Well, it's been great, and I can't see the switchboard, so
oh, okay.
I don't know how much time we have left.
Please pass the word, and don't forget you can listen again to this and other archived Circle Connection shows by visiting www.blogtalkradio.com/circleconnections. It is through the power of connection and being in circle that we co-create a new earth, one circle, one connection, one step at a time. And do remember that it is far more fun to be in circles than to keep running in them. So this is Rhonda Hull and Ann Smith with a deep bow of gratitude to Julie today, and saying goodbye until next time.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you, Rhonda.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.